Good afternoon. Illinois Appellate Court, First District Court is now in session. The First Division, the Honorable Justice Michael B. Hyman presiding. Case number 20-1354, Rehab Care Group East LLC versus Mayfield Care Center LLC.
Good afternoon. Sorry, we're a couple minutes late. My name is Justice Michael B. Hyman. With me is Justice Aurelia Puchinski and Justice Mary Ellen Coghlan. We will conduct ourselves as if we were in the courtroom. That means we will be asking questions. We'll probably be interrupting you. If we interrupt you, please finish your response to or whatever you're saying. And then if you would please answer our questions, we would appreciate it. Each side has 20 minutes and the appellant can reserve. I know we have cross appeals here. So I hope the appellant will first, obviously, and if you wish, you could talk about the cross appeal at that time, or we could do it that you have two replies. I mean, either, I don't know, I don't think we have a preference. Do the parties have a preference?
Is speaking for the initial appellant, defendants, appellants, Your Honor, I'd suggest 15 minutes opening and 5 minutes closing for my sake.
For your sake, that's fine. Is that okay with the appellee?
Your Honor, on behalf of the appellee and cross appellant, would it be all right, and I'm not sure if I'm understanding the suggestion correctly, if I reserve a few minutes as well to have the final thing to say on the cross appeal and rebuttal to whatever Mr. Ashman may have on just the cross appeal?
Okay, we'll give you a couple minutes. That'd be fine.
And what's Mr. Saldinger going to do?
Your Honor, I am going, I represent Rehab Care as well. I've served as local counsel on this matter here in Cook County from the beginning of the case until now. So I will be seen but not heard, Your Honor.
Okay. You don't need to be, if you're not going to be heard, you don't need to be seen either.
Well,
never mind. I mean, it just makes it easier on the Zoom.
Happy to stop video, Judge, and I'll mute as well for the court just in case. But thank you.
Yes. I mean, it's as if you're sitting in a cat's room, just.
Good morning, Your Honors. Ashman, I represent the defendants' appellants. Let me simply introduce the whole argument by concluding it when I say that adopting plaintiff's Rehab Care's interpretation of the law of unjust enrichment contract, but expressly allows a double recovery.
Okay, well, let's stop right there. Okay. So where we all know what the law is, including the judge. The judge said you can't have contract one or the other. I understand. Now, of course, here, the way the judge saw it, there were different parties. So let's start with the party that's not present. That's Everett. Everett is not part of this appeal, correct?
Correct. Although a judgment has been entered against it for the full amount.
Right, but they're not part of the appeal. So that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So the judgment is Everett is on the contract, and the judge also provided that under the contract, there are attorney fees, and Everett's responsible for that. What you're saying, case now, judgment was entered in favor of rebar against the facilities, there's a potential of double recovery. Am I stating that correctly?
Absolutely.
Okay. Why couldn't the court do what it did? And we know that you're only, I don't think anybody's saying they get double recovery. The rehab gets double recovery. But why can't they have an alternative theory where if Everett does not pay the judgment, then the judgment with regard to the facilities will kick in?
Well, they do have alternate pleadings, but they are forbidden by law to have it both ways.
Well, are they?
And this court has already ruled on that. That this court.
If no, I'm but ready, that's not my question. You say they have it both ways. It's not both ways. Before us, Everett's not before us. Okay, so that part of the case is over. So the only question is a double recovery, as I understand it. Okay, and how can there be a double recovery? We haven't heard from the appellee, but let's assume for sake of argument that they say that they're only allowed one recovery. They concede they're only, if they do, I don't know, I'm making this up. But let's say they do concede. Then where does that put us?
Well, where it puts us in the same place as the court decided in the Prince matter, which held that where there is a contracting party that was a shell corporation and where a non-party to the contract actually received benefits, held that the insolvency of the contracting party does not give rise to unjust enrichment versus the solvent beneficiaries who are not contract parties. Number one,
But we don't have any solvency issue here. That's not really applicable to our situation.
But to your point, Your Honor, if Rehab Care states, well, we're not going to even ask for a double recovery, I don't know. First, they don't say that our theory of double recovery is incorrect. They don't say it can't happen. They say it won't happen. They just say, we won't do that. Don't worry about us. In future situations, the fact is, as it stands today, they are allowed to get the full amount of the contract. Enrichment under the facilities.
But you're saying that for something, we only decide cases before us, okay? Something that is a little different than what you're proposing, because the agreement itself provides, for example, that interest or late payments would accrue if the manager and or facility fails to make any payment when due, and that the manager and or facility shall be responsible for payment. So, go ahead.
Pardon me.
Go ahead.
First, it's true that the Everest case is not before the court, but the court certainly could, and in my view, should take notice that there is a judgment in this case against Everest. And I'm glad the court brought up the issue of what the contract says, because there's a grand total of only one party who is obligated to make payment, and that is Everest, the manager. In 4A, fees, manager, which is Everest, shall pay Rehab Care with the applicable time period the fees for the therapy services. It's the only party obligated to make payments. And there is no allegation that Everest was an agent for the principals. There's no allegation that the facilities were principals. There's no allegation of actual authority, apparent authority, or any agency relationship.
It's in the contract, isn't it? Because the contract says the word for. It said
Everest. It says the word for.
What does for mean?
Well, It could mean lots of things.
No, and- no, I'm asking what it means in this context. The use of the word for in many different occasions. What does it mean?
With respect to.
What's it mean? Separate, why does it say Everett for? Why does it say for if it was just Everett?
Well, to this, first of all, it is to distinguish. There are three contracts with respect to Beacon, with respect to Uptown, and with respect to Mayfield. What Rehab Care could have very easily done is make the facility signatories. They could have very easily.
And we're not talking about could haves here. What we're talking about is what has happened. And that's what we have to interpret. Okay. So well, we have an agreement and we look at the four corners agreement. Doesn't appear to be ambiguous at all. And so let's look at the four corners and it says four.
Well, the trial court made a determination that in fact, there was no contract between Rehab Care and any of the facilities. And we believe the trial court was absolutely correct in the first half of Rehab Care's brief. They agree with the trial court too. And
position then that the trial court was incorrect, that there actually was an agreement between Rehab and the facility defendants, but yet facility defendants are completely off the hook and they don't have to pay a dime, even though they got the benefit of the Medicare payments and all the other monetary things that they got. Is that your position?
No, I believe the trial court specifically held that there were no contracts between Rehab Care and the facilities.
And no, I'm asking your position.
My position is there were no contracts between the facilities and the plaintiff. The contract that existed was between Rehab Care and Everest. They had their ability to make whatever deal that they wanted. They drafted the contract. They could have, should have, might have. But the fact is the presumption is against provisions that could have easily been included in the contract, but were not. The fact is the parties did not.
Who got the money from Medicare?
There is no issue here of an attempt to avoid liability.
Could you answer my question? Who got the money from Medicare?
Truthfully, I don't know, but I speculate that the facilities did, but it's a speculation only, Your Honor. There is no challenge to the judgment for the full amount entered against Everest. So there's no effort here to avoid responsibility. There's an effort here to avoid responsibility twice. They can't have it both ways. They can't have it collected from the one party under contract and the other parties under unjust enrichment.
Well, I started with that and I said that let's assume everybody agrees with that, including the judge, right? Am I correct?
The judge
said that yes. That's the law. We all agree it's the law. So if Rehab doesn't believe in that, that it seems to me that's pretty strong law on that has to be followed. So again, what are we arguing about? That we already know that Everett is on the hook. So the question is here, to boil it down to its essence, in my view, is just whether you have to pay once for Everett and the facilities pay, each of them has to pay. And let's say we say, that's not possible. But you can have different theories and alternatives and different parties could be responsible in different ways. For example, if under the judge's ruling, the facilities do not have to pay attorney fees, correct? Unjust enrichment and only the contract provided for attorney fees.
Under the our belief, Your Honor, if you're asking me my position, the facilities don't have to pay a dime for anything. They didn't sign any contract.
No, am I correct?
If I may. I don't have to follow the bedrock.
Not my question. Other parties that would be responsible. Now, you're saying, on what basis are you saying that the judge can't do that?
What I'm saying is there's absolutely nothing to prevent the party in Rehab Care's position from collecting twice on two different judgments. It's not either or.
We're going to find out. We're going to ask them, and we'll find out, because if they can. Double recovery. And the judge in no way intended there be a double recovery, then what is left for us to do?
Well, what they do say on page. A double recovery today and
press. So please.
To expand. Of a.
I apologize for the
not at all, because none of the parties in our view are either signatories or parties. And if they are, if the court does consider them as contracting parties or bound by the contract as Rehab Care would want the court to think, now we've got the identity of the parties in doubt or at least contested. We have an issue of contract interpretation. We've got no allegations of agency law. The contract, the trial court would have to take evidence as to who the parties actually are with a trial on the merits. A summary judgment would be inappropriate. And it should be, in fact, if they adopt that line of thinking, the summary judgment should be reversed and remanded. For further proceedings is just who the heck the contracting parties are or should be as to their varying theories. This is not a function, Your Honor, of whether or not they can do either or. It's a basic reason for existence of the doctrine in the first place. And even in the C. Szabo case, the second district case upon which they say it supports Rehab Care's position, even though it's the second district, even though it was decided 5 years before this court decided High Concept, even in the C. Szabo, the court determined, don't worry, there's no fear here of double liability or double recovery. There's no issue here of someone having to pay twice or someone having to receive twice the same money. And that's because the parties, the moving party waited too long to act to prosecute his remedy at law, and there was no issue. Even in that, the only Illinois case that plaintiff summons for support, it's the only one. Even that one says, don't worry, there's no chance of a double recovery here. and found a way, in our view, an outlier case, and in our view, superseded 5 years later by this court in High Concept, which said, when you're giving, you have a contract with A and benefits to B, who's not a contracting party, and you sue under contract to A, and you sue under unjust enrichment against B, the unjust enrichment claim has to be dismissed. Why? There is a written contract. We're not going to reform your bargain, plaintiff. We are not going to
What if the manager is unable to rehab care because the contract didn't provide for the facility defendants to pay, so looks like you don't get paid?
Not only is it my position, it's the law. That's the deal that
you're not really objecting to double.
If that were, no, Your Honor, if that were true, we would appeal the judgment against Evers. We're not trying to avoid that. That was the judgment on contract. The case law that we've cited makes it clear of the judgment under contract is against a made. That's the deal that you struck. That's yes, it's my position, but it's my position because I've read the case. And the court is not going to reform We're not looking. We have not appealed a judgment against Everest.
All right. Any other questions?
No.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Brimer?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I think what it's ultimately coming down to here is that the facility defendants would like to say that there's no contract between them and rehab care, which is what the trial court found, but also that they don't have to pay for the benefits that they received and would be unjust for them to retain. To Your Honor's question about whether there's a potential for double recovery, no, rehab care said that in its briefs. It's never seeking it, it's not asking for it. To Mr. Ashman's concern about, well, we shouldn't have to take rehab care at its word, fair enough, but the law is pretty clear that you only get to recover once. If that's an issue, I mean, it's not a situation the same as, for example, joint and several, but you can kind of analogize it insofar as just because both are on the hook for the same amount doesn't mean you get to recover it twice. And that's
also, has rehab care been compensated at all? Has Everest paid any part of this judgment?
Of the judgment, Your Honor, no.
And why is that? Was it stayed or something?
No, defendants or facility defendants filed an appeal. So there were some procedures, supplementary procedures as far as citations. And so far there has been nothing that has turned up as a result of that. So to date, rehab care has not recovered anything from this litigation other than a discovery dispute that happened early on that there were some fees awarded.
So okay. This is not a situation where you've been paid on the judgment and now you're seeking double recovery.
Rehab care has not received anything on the judgment, Your Honor.
But do you know if Beacon Uptown in Mayfield actually got money from Medicare for the services?
Yes, Your Honor, with a caveat. So the way that the skilled nursing facilities operate is that they are the ones, Beacon, Mayfield, and Uptown, and the testimony in the dispositive briefing shows that. They agreed with that, or they testified to that. That they're the ones that hold the licenses, they're the ones that have the provider agreements with Medicare, with Medicaid, HMOs, whatever it may be. And Medicaid will only pay the holder of the provider agreements and the licenses.
Okay.
So Everest has said it never held any of the licenses, any of the agreements.
So Everest was just the manager of all those places, but it didn't have a license to get the money from Medicaid.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
So to the extent, and we have not had any evidence below during dispositive motion briefing and discovery, it never came up that the facility defendants were not paid for the services at issue from the payors. So it's not an issue where they're contesting that they received both the services from rehab care and also got the payment. So the facility defendants, in terms of the unjust enrichment side of it, are sitting on, well, sitting on is the wrong word, but have gotten the services for their residents. And they are, as skilled nursing facilities, to maintain their license, they are required to provide services like therapy if their residents require it. And Medicare, Medicaid expects that and expects, because of the regulatory overlay of how things get reimbursed, it has to go to the skilled nursing facility, who is supposed to then pay its vendors like rehab care. So that's what's supposed to happen. And with respect to this, the argument that the facility defendants have advanced that they should not, that there is not a viable claim for unjust enrichment, if the trial court found, if this court were to find on our cross appeal that rehab care has a contract with Beacon, that rehab care has a contract with Mayfield, and rehab care has a contract with Uptown, rehab care wouldn't dispute that it can't then get unjust enrichment against those Beacon, Mayfield, Uptown. But the issue here is that the trial court said there is no contract, and it's a contract or remedy at law against a party that bars unjust enrichment. The fact that there may be another contract floating out there with another party, another entity, is not a bar for an alternative equitable cause of action.
What about counsel's, and we're getting a little bit into the cross appeal, but what about counsel's argument that the contract says, oh no, 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 the only party you can recover against is the manager, not the individual facilities?
And that does cross over into the cross appeal on the breach of contract. And we are arguing kind of an alternative world here, but if that is the case, if the only party to the contracts besides rehab care is Everest, then Everest is the only one who is barred or who is under any obligations under the contract. So in terms of the unjust enrichment side of it, if that's what this court agrees and with the trial court, which the trial court found that Beacon, Mayfield, Uptown are not parties to the contracts, there's no question that the unjust enrichment judgment can stand, because all the other elements were met. And frankly, the facility defendants didn't even contest anything other than this legal argument about whether unjust enrichment as a claim is barred. And then I suppose the concerns, potential concerns about double recovery. If we switch to the cross appeal side, and it's a bit two sides of the same coin, in that, you know, if the court disagrees with the trial court on unjust enrichment because it finds that there's a contract, then rehab care should be entitled to judgment against the facility defendants for contract. And the thing that is interesting with the way that this litigation played out is rehab care has always believed that it had contracts with Beacon, Mayfield, and Uptown. The facility defendants have also always believed that up until basically the dispositive motion briefing, because they judicially admitted it multiple times. So in their answer to the breach of contract claim, which rehab care asserted against all of the defendants, including Everest, all of the defendants admitted that they were parties to their contracts. Now, it's Beacon to the Beacon contract, not Beacon to Mayfield and Uptown, but to their respective contracts, they admitted that in the answer in a judicial filing. They admitted it again when they filed their request for admission, where rehab care had asked them to admit that Beacon is party to the Beacon agreement, Mayfield to the Mayfield, Uptown to the Uptown, and that they're valid contracts. And they admitted that. As far as what the parties actually understand about the contracts and what the contracts say, because they are clear on their face, is that all four defendants filed a breach of contract claim against rehab care. And that breach of contract claim was filed almost 8 or 9 months after rehab care filed its complaint. So it wasn't as if, you know, didn't really know what was going on yet and just filed it and realized later that wasn't the case. They specifically moved the trial court for permission to belatedly file a counterclaim. And that counterclaim was Everest, Beacon, Mayfield, and Uptown. All four of them said that they had contracts with rehab care and rehab care allegedly breached them. And that was filed with the court. And it's a judicial admission. It's binding. And to the extent that the contracts, that there could be any question about the contracts, I think that answers the question as to who the parties are. Rehab cares.
But I think, but my confusion is, and obviously I don't know this as well as parties do, it sounds like counsel is arguing that even if we, if the judge was wrong and there was a contract, that even under those circumstances, the facility defendants are still off the hook because the contract only provides that the manager has to pay, not the facility defendants. How do you respond to that? Because I think that's what he's arguing.
That he's arguing that...
that the contract provides that only the manager is responsible for payment, not the facility defendants.
And if that's the, if we're going to say that the manager, Everest, is the only one on the contract, then yes, under the contract, that's the only one who's responsible. And that's what the trial court found, that under the contract, only Everest was responsible. But if they're not parties to the contract, then they're not, there's nothing in the law that says that you're bound to a contract you're not a party to, or that there's not other causes of action out there that are not based on the contract. So to the extent that that ruling holds and that they, it's determined, yes, the facility defendants have no contracts with Rehab Care, then Everest is the only one who's going to be bound by that, and Rehab Care is free to pursue alternative claims of action, causes of action.
No, my question is, if we were to conclude that they were parties to the contract, what remedies do you have against the individual facilities under the contract? Because I think I heard a few minutes ago that there aren't any, that the only remedy would be limited to the manager, not the facility defendants.
Your Honor, there are other, if they're parties, if they're actually parties to the contract, there are other provisions within the contract that envision that the facilities will also be paying, that if the manager isn't the one, if Everest doesn't pay, one of them has to pay. And it's the language that Justice Hyman cited too, as far as if either of them doesn't pay, then we're also entitled to all of this. And all. So is it perhaps the you know, would we have liked to have seen a little bit different language? Maybe. But at the end of the day, I think the contracts are clear that the expectation from all the parties was that both Everest and whichever facility defendant were party to it were supposed to pay for the services.
Let's take what you said and see if I understand it too. Under what I understand you to say, there's been a concession made that all the parties to this case are parties to the contract, correct?
Yes, that the facility defendants admitted.
Everybody's a party to the contract. That's been stated several ways, several times in different ways throughout the litigation. Okay. So in that regard, the judge was wrong in ruling that the facilities were not part of the contract, correct?
Yes.
So we could then what that means is what the appropriate way to look at this then, considering their concessions in this case, is that all four parties of the defendant, all four of the, yeah, of the defendants, excuse me, of the appellants, would be responsible for the judgment.
Yes,
and the attorney fees.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then there's no unjust enrichment.
Correct, Your Honor.
And end of story.
Yes, Your Honor.
So, and what the judge did is kind of split it, because the judge did not believe that the facilities were part of that agreement under his interpretation of the agreement.
That's how I read it.
Even though the party had conceded it several ways in litigation.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the appropriate thing that you're asking us to do then would be to send it back for entry of judgment against all four entities on behalf of rehab, and the judgment would include attorney fees. And then they can collect against each of the judgments would go to the particular facility and to Everett on each of the three contracts, correct?
Yes, that it would, yes, the Beacon would only be responsible for the Beacon amount. Beacon,
and then Everett would be responsible for all three.
Correct.
And for all the attorney fees. So it actually would be pretty much the position that it would be in if we cut, if there's these two judgments. Basically, the only thing that changes would be that the facilities would also be responsible for attorney fees, which they are not now.
Correct. Correct, Your Honor.
But so if we put it together the way that the appellants have already conceded, then case there is no problem with regard to double recovery. There's and the law with regard to unjust enrichment has been followed to the as it's understood. End of case. Correct.
Yes, okay. And again, that's Rehab Care has always said throughout this case that it understood that it was a breach of contract. That was its primary claim, but always brings these alternative claims in the event, as the trial court here found, that there's potentially an unenforceable contract.
Okay, but Rehab had separate agreements with Mayfield, with Beacon, and with Uptown that were signed by Mr. Levovitz as a member and manager of both Everest and each of Mayfield, Beacon, and Uptown. So I'm seeing that as contracts that were signed by an appropriate agent.
Yes, Your Honor. And to the question about the word for, the laws indicates that the case law and following those restatement of agent, restatement says that when you've got the agent's name, which is Everest here, followed by for or as agent for some combination thereof, and then the principal's name, the principal is going to be bound. And so that's what happens here. And then, you know, Everest is also bound because case law says that where the agent indicates that it also intends to be bound by the contract, it will be bound as well. And clearly, I don't think anyone is disputing that Everest wanted to agree to be bound by the contract. So yes, we would, Rehab Care's position is that that language, that agency language in the signature block is sufficient to cover Everest in whichever facility defendant that it is.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. Mr. Ashman, 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll move as quickly as I can. In terms of concessions, Your Honor, let me make this concession to Your Honor that prior counsel did make some filings that were not as cogent or coherent as we'd have liked. That said, when Rehab Care states that they answer requests to admit, admitting the fact that they were Beacon, the facilities were contract parties, they were answering requests to admit that Everest and or Beacon were signed the contract. Everest and or Uptown signed the contract. That's what was admitted to.
So what?
And I but can't.
What does that mean? You're saying
exactly correct.
Are the contracts themselves part of any of the record?
Yes.
Okay. Where?
They know that they are in one document. They're attached to a counterclaim, and I know Rehab Care attached it or a redacted version of it to redact proprietary information attached to their complaint. The fact is, however, what does and or mean? Well, I'll tell you what and or does not mean. It does not mean and. It could mean or.
No, I think you're absolutely incorrect. As a matter of English, what and or, which is something that probably lawyers should not use, but it's known to be and or. So it's A and B, A or B. It's both. It's not one or the other, as you seem to be suggesting. But the understanding, according to the dictionary, is it's both. So you have the and you have the or. So I don't see how that argument you just gave in at all helps you.
Well, we now know that the request to admit also included the phrase Everest or Beacon signed the contract. I bow to Your Honor's superior knowledge.
I'm not saying it's superior.
Well, I am. But what I can say is another lawyer superior to me, Abraham Lincoln, made it very clear that when you're dealing with a four-legged dog and you call the tail of a dog a leg, that dog's got four legs, not five. And we could spend the rest of the day saying that we signed the contract when we didn't, or that we're contracting parties and they weren't.
I don't think Lincoln was referring to this contract, to tell you the truth.
He was not referring to this contract.
And I don't think it applied.
guaranteed, but it does have some precedential value.
I know that quote quite well. But in any event, we have something different here. We don't have to go to the stool. Let's just go to Mr. Leibovitz. He admitted at his deposition that he believed he had the authority to sign for facility defendants. And Mr. Heineman said the same thing.
We could remove all doubt if the plaintiff did what could have easily been done and remove doubts, remove all the arguments, remove all the controversy, and just have the signature line for Everest and a signature line for Beacon.
That's not the issue. And you know, we're not rewriting the contract. The contract is there, and we have testimony from the individuals involved that they had that authority. And in fact, because it may have not been what you wanted, but apparently it's in the record, and you have to live with the pleadings and you have to live with your admissions. And so for purposes of this case, if we accept all that, then the judge might have incorrectly determined that the facilities were not part of the contract. And then everything is solved. And we have one, and you should be very happy because you have one judgment and we have one attorney fees and everybody can go from there. So what's the problem?
Right. All I have to do is lose the appeal in order to achieve happiness.
I don't know what Lincoln would say about that, but that's another day.
He would say something about divided we fall. I do think that the court would have to overrule the trial court upon that finding. And I do believe it would have to undermine High Concept. I do believe that we would have an issue of granting relief in the face of a written contract, unless the court decides unjust enrichment simply doesn't apply. And everybody has gotten it wrong.
Okay. Any other questions? Anything else you want to say? Mr. Anderson, anything else?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. 2 minutes.
And I'll be brief, Your Honors. Just briefly on the High Concept Holdings case referred to, again, if this court determines that there's a contract with the three facility defendants, it doesn't really matter. But either way, High Concept Holdings is an unpublished case where the fact situation is distinguishable based on what was going on there and the relationship and what played out. It's in the briefs, but just to highlight that that is different. With respect to the RFA's request for admission, whether or not there's a debate on what and or actually means, at the end of the day, there's still two other judicial admissions that are an answer and a counterclaim that show that they admitted they were parties to the case. And as Your Honors know, we're dealing with what the contract is, whether any or all of us would have done it differently if at the time is not before us today. If the court would like to affirm all of the trial court's rulings, if it finds that they aren't parties to the contracts, That's always one option, or alternatively, as we've argued on our cross appeal, RehabCare submits that the facility defendants are parties to the contract and that all the other elements of breach of contract were proved and there was no dispute. Facility defendants and Everest didn't even contest any of the factual things that support the rest of the breach of contract. And if that's the case, then RehabCare would ask that this court determine that, find that the trial court may have gotten it wrong in terms of the breach of contract and that RehabCare is entitled to breach of contract judgment against all the defendants or the facility defendants here on appeal.
Thank you. I want to thank both of you. Thank you for your briefs. Thank you for your excellent arguments. You're both gave us lots to think about, and we will take the case under advisement.